Hey everyone, it's Clarissa here from the Thriving Through Menopause podcast. You know, as I talk to women around the world, I know that more than ever, we're looking for holistic ways to manage our menopause and to feel empowered that we're in control of our own health and healing during this vital life transition. I sit down each week with amazing guests to talk about ideas, strategies, approaches, and opportunities to help us thrive through menopause. Episodes drop every Tuesday, so I hope that you'll join us. And I have a little request for you, that if you find value from the stories, lessons, and wisdom that we share, I'd like you to support this podcast. One way you can do that is to hop on to wherever you listen to podcasts and like and subscribe and share it so that others can hear the messages too. You might want to buy me a coffee to help me keep this podcast up and running. And I'd love you to subscribe to my newsletter, Heart of Menopause, over on Substack. Don't forget, episodes drop every Tuesday, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being part of this community, listening to this podcast, and I hope that you enjoy the new content that's coming up in this new season. Welcome to this week's episode of Thriving Through Menopause, and it is always a pleasure for me to invite back a guest from some episodes back, and that is Dr. Delia McCabe. Welcome, Delia.
Thank you, Clarissa. It's a delight to be here. I love the work that you do. I think it's so important. I'm so happy to support your community.
Oh, well, thank you. And you and I chatted a bit at the early part of this year offline about some of the work that you've been doing and some of the things that you've been observing around stress and burnout, particularly among women. And that is what I want to really home in on, because I think there have been shifts for people through the pandemic into this new era where every moment we look feels stressful.
I think this is a very important conversation, Clarissa, because I think the world post-COVID is a different world to the world that existed before COVID. And I think, you know, people have touched on the surface of that, but I don't think people really understand the depth of the difference and how that difference has affected us and our emotional, physical, mental equilibrium as a species. So I think discussing this, I'm hoping that it will make a lot of people go, aha, I haven't thought about it that way. And in so doing, give them more power to be able to make the changes that they can make. Because we are living in a very, very complicated world today. Actually, the word complicated isn't the right word. The word complex is the right word, because complicated means you can actually sort through things and make sense of them. Complex means you actually can't do that. And I think that's part of the problem we're now dealing with. COVID taught us that a terrible thing could happen and all sorts of consequences, ramifications, ripple effects would come from that terrible thing, that terrible event, and we cannot predict it. We cannot figure out what those things are going to be. And as you know, with your neuroscience background as well, it's one of the worst things for the brain to experience is a sense of lack of control and not being able to pick up a pattern. So for me, that's been something that I've been pondering for a while. The other thing that I think has happened, and this is a confluencing factor, is that technology has really taken off. And so we've got AI in the background, and not really in the background anymore, in our lives, dictating, you know, when we type a text, it will prompt us on the spelling of that text. When we look for something online, it's prompting us in relation to our previous searches. And then we've got ChatGPT, you know, we can just plug something in and a whole article appears, which is really sobering and something that I think we need to touch on a little bit later as well. But this confluence of, you know, what happened with COVID, leaving the world vulnerable and people confused and overwhelmed. And then we've got technology coming along, which is adding another facet to this complexity. We're now left with so much information. And most people are what we call infovores. We collect information, you know, like we used to gather food and gather kindling when we lived in caves. Now we've got all this information together. The challenge we have is that very little of this information is actually valuable, useful. Some of it can be downright dangerous. And a lot of it is, it now exists in these echo chambers. So we have all of this level of complexity and this information overload that is hitting our brains. And our brains are really ancient structures. You know, they primed for finding food, finding shelter, finding a mate, protecting the people closest to us. And then every now and again, we'd get a terrible fright, whether it was a tiger, a saber-toothed tiger, whether it was another tribe. But generally, our emotions were pretty stable because we kind of like just looked after ourselves and our worlds were very small. Now we have exactly the opposite. And that is the reason, as we spoke earlier, I really do believe that we have a completely different kind of burnout now. Our burnout is not related to work where the official definition of burnout originated. We're now living in a world that is overwhelming, that we are uncertain about what the future looks like. There are global catastrophes, there's environmental destruction, you know, there's socio-political challenges. We're finding much higher rates of mental illness. And women especially are very vulnerable to this.
Yeah, indeed they're doing it. And I think when I place this in the context of what's going on within menopause, it's become conversation, but so much of it, you're not sure whether the source is right. There's a lot of twisting of facts, an immense amount of conversation going on, lots of fear mongering, and that's grown. And I think when you place us in an already vulnerable world, in a vulnerable situation, because big hormonal change and life transition is quite frightening, really, because we don't know and we're not always in control. And then people are bombarding us with very polarized echo chamber type messages. I think it makes it even harder for women. And I think they're feeling it. And so they're either running scared, or they're like, I can't deal with this. And I think the worst thing for me is I don't want us to stop talking about this because it's so important. But if we don't recognize the modern life experience with what's going on with our own bodies, we're going to have women who really are going to feel much worse than better, even though that's not always the intention of people steering these messages.
I agree completely. And I think because we now have an aging population, there are many more women experiencing menopause and many more women in positions of power where they can make a difference in the world. But if you're feeling rubbish, you know, you're feeling exhausted, you're suffering from hot flushes, you know, you're not sleeping well, you're very moody, your appetite has changed. All of these things obviously affect our well-being and how we cope in the world. So, you know, what you pointed to there about all this information, I'm very happy that people are having this discussion. I think the discussion is very important. You know, our hormones are part of our life from when we hit puberty until we die. They're very much part of a woman's life. And to have the conversation is definitely empowering, but there's so much information out there. And as you say, who to trust, this is where the challenge comes in. And I think one of the things related to this onslaught of information is something that I call choice fatigue. And most people have heard about decision fatigue, which is where you get exhausted because you've got to make a decision between a finite amount of options. Choice fatigue is different. Choice fatigue is where there is an infinite amount of options. And if you just Google hormone replacement therapy, for example, on Google, you'd probably find hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of options. And that's what I say, you know, that's what I'm referring to when I speak about choice fatigue. So we have that other aspect to women not knowing where to go. And so they may just Google something. They may listen to what a friend has said. And so it then becomes a conversation that isn't actually empowering. It's actually more exhausting. And so what we want to do is reduce that exhaustion, bring clarity, and make it actionable and make it so that it actually empowers the woman's whole life, not just this one aspect, which is obviously important, the hormones, but we are more than just our hormones, aren't we?
Oh, definitely. We are. And I think that this time of life is very complex. As you said, we've got what's going on around us in a sociocultural, political context. But we've also juggling a million things, I think. You know, we are working, and work environments have changed since COVID. We have got children who don't leave home. I think we're more concerned about our children than in previous generations. We're, you know, the dangers of the internet, the dangers of drugs, children not finding a job, even though they're well qualified, that they can't get on a housing ladder. And then we have our parents, and aged care is a mess, you know, and the healthcare system is a mess. So I think this is a very intense period in women's life. And so I'm not surprised that you're saying that women are reporting more burnout than men. But what do the statistics really look like?
Well, it's interesting because different countries have different levels and ways of reporting, as you well know. But it would seem that globally, in primarily the Western world where we've done the research, is that women, and I think it's actually interesting, some of the younger generations are reporting more burnout than men generally. I always take this data with a pinch of salt, because it may just be that men aren't reporting it and women may be reporting it more than men. However, the data from before COVID, when we just looked at chronic stress and burnout wasn't such a big topic, we know that women report higher levels of stress than men do. And I think that this definitely speaks to some of the physiological differences that we experience and also some of the neurophysiological differences. And I'll just touch on that to give a bit of a background. So the first thing which you mentioned, which is critically important, is all this juggling that women do, and it's just become worse. But this juggling, the term for that is called psychosocial stress. And so we know that women have always experienced more of that because they are involved with more a whole lot of different aspects of life versus men. And that's just to be expected with the society that we've co-created. The other challenge, which is more neurophysiological, is that the female brain in relation to emotional regulation is impacted directly by our hormones. And you know this well, Clarissa. You know, we know that estrogen speaks to and works, dances with serotonin. And we know that progesterone does the same thing with GABA. And when our hormones fluctuate and when they become very unbalanced, this directly impacts these neurotransmitters, serotonin and GABA. And they have got an enormous role to play in keeping our brain calm, regulated, managing our appetite, regulating our sleep. It's a terrible ripple effect when those hormones go wonky and they directly impact the neurotransmitter. So that's the other aspect. Something else which a lot of people aren't aware of is that the female brain is more sensitive to stress than the male brain. And we think this is from an evolutionary perspective because women needed to be more attuned to the environment, think more consequentially, in other words, what could happen, because we had to protect our offspring. And so that leads to us just being more sensitive to stress and what's going on in our environment. And that speaks directly to COVID and this complexity that we're now living with. And the other challenge that we have is that the female brain is more attuned to vocal and visual perception. Now, this happens within the cingulate gyrus. And we can think of this part of the brain as like a relay station for thoughts. So a thought comes in and then another thought takes over. And so this process should run really smoothly. But the cingulate gyrus in females is very sensitive because it's also the place where we nest. You know, when women are pregnant and just before they give birth, they have this frenzied feeling that they've got to sort out the nursery. And, you know, the husband will go, "Are you losing your mind?" And the woman will go, no, I need to do this. That's the part of the brain that's involved with this nesting feeling that we get, and also, as I said, in relation to picking up verbal and visual cues. Now, when we get very stressed, the cingulate gyrus in women, because it's so super sensitive, becomes more challenged. So now this is where rumination occurs. So instead of being this beautiful waylay station for thoughts and for emotions, what happens there is the thought and the emotion get stuck. So when women wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and there's the thought going around and around in their head, it's this part of the brain which is saying, hold on a second, this thought could matter. This could be a survival thing that you need to pay attention to. And that's a huge challenge now because there's so many things in our environments that can get stuck there. And I think a lot of women are finding that now, that they just seem to ruminate on something. And that's related to burnout, of course, because if you keep on thinking about something and you have no power to change that thing, then your cortisol levels go up. And your capacity, your endocrine system is now also disturbed, and that affects your hormones, and that affects the transition into menopause and during menopause. And so women find themselves with their brains feeling like they're out of control. This overwhelm, this uncertainty becomes a problem. And it's just because nature handed us this beautiful brain, but the environment that this brain is now operating within is not conducive to the brain flowing smoothly. So those are all of the reasons why the female brain is more sensitive to stress. And the challenge, Clarissa, which you well know, is that a brain that becomes overwhelmed with cortisol, it also starts changing structurally. And then the limbic system becomes less capable of modulating emotion. And so women find themselves feeling more anxious and depressed because this beautiful balance of I'm having a tough time now, but I'll come out of it. You know, I'm having a bad morning, but the afternoon will be better. That whole emotional regulation that we become used to becomes out of kilter. And so they find themselves feeling much more moody than they recognize themselves as feeling. And often I think women say that it's their hormones that are causing this. And I think often they will blame menopause when it's actually not menopause. It's all of these different factors working together, leading to men that is no longer capable of this beautiful emotional regulation that it was, you know, that it evolved to experience.
Yeah, that's such a vital point, Dela, because I think women are being promised hormone replacement therapy will fix it, but it's only going to fix parts of it. And certainly if women don't address chronic stress here and we make nothing to change that part of it, really we're taking hormones with limited impact, really. They'll do some things in the system, but chronic stress has to be addressed. We have to get the cortisol levels down. I mean, the impact on the adrenals is massive, yes, of course, as well. And we have to start to bring the stress to a space where we can manage so that we're not waking up at two in the morning, because we're not waking up predominantly because we're having a hot flash or a night sweat. That can be happening for some women, but we're waking up because of this crazy rumination and then can't get back to sleep. And of course, that has flow-on effects to the control of our appetite, and then we eat and then we put on weight, and it becomes much, much bigger and compounded into multiple issues that women have at this time of life.
Absolutely. It's got a common cause, or a path that becomes established with the high levels of cortisol. But as you say, all these different symptoms start appearing because of that. And I think that, you know, when I work with women, I say to them, look, it's really simple to solve this problem, but it's not easy. And they look at me, you know, what do you mean? And as you say, it's really simple. We need to bring those stress levels down, but it's not as easy to do that as we'd imagine, because one of the things that happens to us across the lifetime, and I think most people know this now, but I just need to remind everybody, is that, you know, we build up behavioral habits. We all know this. That's why we can get into a car and drive the car without thinking. But what a lot of people don't realize is we also build up habitual thoughts and habitual emotions. Now, it's important to keep this in mind, because if you've always responded in a certain way to a situation, it doesn't have to be a behavior, but it can be a thought. And that thought then gets played over and over and over again until it becomes a neural pathway. And we all know that neurons that, you know, fire together, wire together. So we actually have to break down, which we actually don't really ever do. You never break down a neural pathway. You actually have to create a new neural pathway. We have to create a neural pathway that when that thought hits us, we now have to practice another thought. And that is a simple explanation, but it is not easy to do that. Because when everything else is hitting us, we have to keep on going back to that. And we have to make it really, really simple. That makes it a lot easier. And the other thing we have to do is make sure that I'm so well nourished, which is part of my conversation. Because if your brain isn't well nourished, trying to create a new neural pathway is so much more difficult. But you first have to make the decision. What do you want that new thought to be? Because if the thought is, it's just my hormones and I can't do anything about it, we need to change that and say, what can I do in relation to this thought that I keep on having? And what That's the thing that I think women are not aware of. You know, that they know that they are behavioral habits, but this thought that you keep on having is not serving you. And so we need to change that thought. Make a different thought. So eventually that thought becomes the predominant thought. And Clarissa, just going back to what we were speaking about earlier, when there's so much information around and women are looking for a magic bullet like hormone replacement, they think, oh, that's the solution. When they do that, they realize it's not the solution. So it is working our way through all of this information to find the gems, the gold, the truths. That is really going to work. And as I said, you know, it's simple, but it may not be easy to action. And that's kind of like what we do, isn't it? We try and share that message with women.
Exactly. And I think also provide solutions to women that are actually doable, because they're not a quick fix, are they, Delia?
They're not a quick fix. And that's part of the problem we have with this information overload. The people that sell sound bites, the people that sell a product that's going to magically fix everything, you know, this product that's going to stop belly bloat, it's going to make you lose weight overnight, it's going to make you sleep perfectly. You know what the product I'm talking about, the magic product. They sell them. Yep. And they sell them because they're selling them with a sound bite, but they don't work. And, you know, a brain that is tired and a brain that is overwhelmed with information, a brain that's waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning will grab for the easiest thing. Because that's just the way our neurology works. So to try to get women to understand that there are actionable things that they can do, one of the things I get the woman that I work with to do is just to do a giant brain dump. Every single thing that is bothering them, just do a giant brain dump. And then we work through each of those items. And once we do that, we realize, hold on a second, you know, there's only 20% of these items that you can actually do something about. The other 80%, you can do nothing about. I mean, you may be able to go and vote when the coming election comes up, but until that point in time, there's no use lying awake at night and worrying about politics. So for me, that's a very clarifying exercise, because suddenly women go, why am I wasting time on the things that I can do nothing about? But they need to take the time to do the brain dump and not buy the product that they have been promised is going to, you know, move the universe for them. And that's kind of like what we have to be sharing with people. That's so clear.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is the important part, is to actually be aware of how much stuff that we're not in control of is dictating our day, as you say. And I think that is a massive thing for women. It's a real, oh, I can't change that. And then I think also be able to navigate them through the guilt and the shame that we feel, because we are conditioned to think that we should be able to cope with all of this. So there is both a realization that not all of this is our responsibility, and that we don't have to feel bad about it, that this is fine.
100%. That guilt seems to just come with puberty, doesn't it? And we do need to get away from that, because, you know, there may have been a point in time, a point in history where women could cope with a whole lot of things. But that time in history is long gone. We can no longer cope with the complexity and this onslaught of mostly useless information that we faced with. So we actually have to draw a line in the sand. And I know that when you work with people, I'm quite sure that you are also very firm on saying, okay, we need to build some new boundaries. And what do those boundaries look like? And I actually practice the words that women are going to use when they now speak to people who have been giving them this feeling of guilt if they don't say yes. So now we start a new conversation, and this is what the conversation looks like. And then we work our way through that, because until they have a new way of speaking, a new way of addressing the challenges, they're going to just fall into the same old hole again. So it is a cognitive shift and a perspective shift that women need to experience to be able to stand in their power and say, no, I won't feel guilty about this because this is not my problem and I actually can't control this. This is actually your situation. And I can be as a support in the corner, but I'm not going to do this for you anymore. Now, of course, this gets complicated when you've got children still living at home, when you've got elderly parents that are relying on you, when you've got a boss who really is a nightmare and wants you to do all the work and they get all the benefit. I mean, these are scenarios that we come across all the time with women. If that's the case, we need a new language, a new way to address those challenges. And so we need to practice those to create those new neural pathways.
Yes.
As I said, it's simple, but it's not easy.
No, definitely it isn't easy. And it requires, I think, women and ourselves too, to be willing to go on this path, because it's not easy. It challenges where we are. It challenges everything we've ever done up to this point. But also, burnout is hard to come back from. So I think that when we get close to that point, I think many of my clients, and I'm not sure about yours, Zia, they're very close to that burnout, or they've tipped the line. They don't want to go back to that. But, you know, we don't want to have women in that state in order for them to have to do that. It's very much about preparing women so that we don't fall down that hole. And I think that's the challenge. I mean, Delia, how do you actually address that, to say to women, this is what you've got to shift before you fall over the cliff?
Look at what predisposing factors are, and I ask women to recognize what those are. And we do know that there are certain personality tendencies that make more women susceptible to burnout than men. And the challenge with that is for women to actually recognize that. And then I'll say to them, you know, I'll give an example. I say, okay, so you've got this project to do at work and you're running late with the project, and it's not your fault that you're running late. What do you do when it comes time and you need to go to sleep? And then they answer. And then I say, well, okay, now those of you that said you're going to work an extra hour, you are more prone to burnout than those who said, I'm going to go to sleep and I'll deal with it tomorrow. And then we discuss why we do that. And then, you know, you brought up guilt. And this is part of the problem, that if they don't carry the load, then they feel like they are responsible, even though they didn't cause the delay in the project completion. And once I get them to see that, and I say to them, okay, now I want you to, in the next week, go and find three more examples where you are prepared to put your health second and someone else's well-being first. And once they open their eyes to that, Clarissa, something shifts and they start saying, oh, I didn't realize I was doing this. I do this often. I do it with my grown-up child. You know, I do it with my husband, my partner. I do it with my mother. And then we start discussing why that is the case. And so those tendencies are something that are very important for women to look at, because if they've tipped over into burnout, it's a lot easier for them to start recovering if they stop doing those things. If they haven't yet tipped over and they see themselves doing that, they know they're at risk. So it gets the ball going and it gets them asking those questions, because my goal as a therapist, I used to think the same thing, and I'm not a therapist anymore. And I, you know, work differently. But my goal has always been is to get the person to take responsibility, because I can't be there 24/7. I can't be there when the partner is pushing the guilt buttons. I need them to stop and go, oh, I recognize this situation. What have I always done? How do I want it to be different? Because that person needs to take that power. That person needs to take that control, and they need to now run with it into the future so that they can, you know, thrive. So that's part of what I do. Are you susceptible? Is this you? Once they go, oh, yeah, it is, then we're on the road to recovery and to prevention.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there definitely are people who are more susceptible than not, as you said there. There's people who've maybe had a very long history of doing things for others and covering up and carrying the load. Whatever scenario that is, and for them that must be that they just are more susceptible comparative to somebody who's had strong boundaries from the beginning.
Yes, I think absolutely. And the other thing you reminded me now is also adverse childhood events. You know, we know that these events prime the female brain much more than the male brain for higher cortisol levels across their lifetime. And we found that out in a terrible natural experiment that happened during World War II. And you may know about this experiment where some researchers decided to have a look at these children that were separated from their caregivers and sent out of Germany to other countries to be taken care of while the war continued. And the researchers found that 6 decades later, when these people were in their 60s, the woman still had elevated levels of cortisol after 6 decades. And the men had higher levels, but not as high as the female levels. So we know that something about the way the female brain sets itself up for life when it experiences adverse events in childhood will affect it across the lifetime. So that's something else that I say to women. And I don't get them to dive into their childhood trauma because, you know, we don't want to replay that. But I say, look, if these certain things occurred in your childhood, the chances are likely that you are more stress sensitive than someone that didn't happen to. Yeah. And that means that when you say yes to a project, when you look at a situation, when you're analyzing your role in whatever the team requires, you need to take this piece of information on board, because this means that if the going gets tough, you on that team may be the person that takes, you know, that has a bigger negative effect than anybody else because of your childhood. And that just gives them another tool in the toolbox to stand back and go, hold on a second, I am more sensitive because this happened to me. So that was a terrible experiment that had to happen, but it was very informative for us as people that support people, you know, to cope well or improve their coping capacity, their resilience.
Indeed. And I think what we do know is that adverse childhood experiences tend to make menopause symptoms more acute, longer, and more difficult. And we also know that women who have experienced forms of trauma, even post-childhood, have often more difficult menopause transitions. So I think it plays out all the while that adverse events, because of what you're explaining around the whole cortisol level, then creates a situation that plays out not only in that they're more sensitive to burnout, but they're more sensitive to having a difficult menopause transition that, you know, heightened hot flashes, anxiety, and often that these last, their menopause transition lasts years longer than those who have not experienced levels of ACEs. But I think we recognize that adverse childhood experience can occur to all of us in some form, but particularly if they've been significant.
I think that's very important that you mention that, Clarissa, because I think for me as an ex-therapist, you know, knowledge is power. And if someone is aware of this fact, that if they don't set up the boundaries, make sure that they handling stress well and become more stress resilient, if they don't do that before menopause and consciously understand that they need to do that, they will experience a worse menopause. I think that that's very valuable. Because wouldn't you be prepared for something? And, you know, we go back to what the brain likes. The brain likes to find a pattern. The brain likes to know what the consequence of something is going to be. So when we explain this to women and they really get it, that knowledge can empower them going forward for how they're going to manage themselves now so that in the future, you know, there's a little story that goes, what does your future self want you to do now? And I love that question, because that gives you a different perspective. If you know that it's going to be tougher for you during menopause, if you don't do certain things now, wouldn't you do those things now? And then we have to get the woman to be in the mind space to be able to do that. But I think, you know, what we're talking about as we come back to it, this is really simple, but it's not easy to do. And someone needs to basically say to themselves, look, I need to do what is necessary for my well-being. And sometimes that's the hardest thing for a woman to do, because they put everybody else first. But I think this conversation that we're having will hopefully inspire women to sit back and go, what can I do? How should I do that? And who can I trust to help me as I make this, you know, this transition into somebody who really does want their future to look good?
I think that's a vital point that we are not just managing in the moment, we're managing our future self too, because high levels of stress obviously have long-term implications, don't they, in terms of not only how long we might live, but the quality of our life post-menopause.
Absolutely. And there's more and more research that's coming out to show that the cortisol, the high levels of cortisol pathway, if I can call it that, or that foundation, has multiple effects. And, you know, as you said, we know that it makes people more prone to mental health challenges. We know it damages their endocrine system. We know they become more susceptible to cancer. We know that it gives them more cardiac events. So the list of the effects of high levels of cortisol are very, very well known. And depending on our lifestyle choices, depending on our childhood, depending on our genes, depending on our gender, we don't know which of those effects we're going to experience, but we know it's definitely going to reduce our lifespan and, of course, the quality of our life. Because, you know, you can't be healthy and live your best life if you feel like you're depressed and anxious, if your body doesn't feel, you know, capable of functioning, if you don't have a lot of energy. And those are all things we need to be able to thrive and live a good life. So addressing one thing has such a myriad of effects that indeed, we'd really be quite silly if we didn't do that. What's up?
Yeah. So I really love the case that that we take care of our stress alongside caring for the other aspects of our hormonal health. And I think that's particularly relevant what we said about aging, because we of course know that estrogen has neuroprotective effects. It has other effects on the cardiovascular system. It really can protect us against other episodes of cancer, of osteoporosis. But of course, we know that stress, and if we're not taking care of that and we have stress, then we are really going to find ourselves in this difficult position, which I think women do. And they're only really looking at one part of the equation. So I think what you've really highlighted in our conversation is how important managing the cortisol part of our hormonal makeup is, or our stress hormones in totality, alongside the sex hormones.
And I think, you know, just to step back, we start doing that from a psychological perspective. What can we control? Because the minute we start doing that, I always used to think that my psychology degree was a waste of time. But as I've gotten older, I've found that it's actually really been quite useful, because I bring different aspects of that training into, you know, working with people. So we start from a psychological perspective, you know, what can you control? And then we get ourselves to look at what we can't control and actually laugh at how we're trying to control that. Because once we bring some humor into that, we can go, that's actually quite ridiculous. Me, my little lonesome me, I'm not going to be able to impact the, you know, the political outcome here, or I'm not going to be able to stop, you know, climate degradation or climate catastrophe, whatever you want to call it. So once we take a little bit of a sense of humor into it, and we can laugh at ourselves and say, why was I thinking that? Why do women feel we have to carry the world on our shoulders? We can then step back and then we start analyzing and carefully working out what we can control. But I think we need to bring a little bit of humor into this, because, you know, sometimes I work with women and they sit back and they suddenly see themselves as being ludicrous in a particular situation. And yeah, once they do that, that gives them the psychological space to then make a change. Once we're too enmeshed in a situation, we can't do that. So laughter helps us separate from it.
Indeed, and I think laughter helps us definitely through menopause, because we do some pretty crazy things, you know, your keys are in the fridge and you've driven the wrong direction. But, you know, in the end of the day, very little of that is life-threatening, and a lot of it we can learn to put a bit of humor therapy into our lives.
And the good thing about humor as well is that it automatically switches on our parasympathetic nervous system. We don't even have to think about it. It's not like, you know, you've got to sit down and meditate. When you laugh, you automatically switch off the stress response. So I tell people to laugh as much as they possibly can and watch as many YouTubes as you can. And there's a woman, an American comedian, and I fell into I don't even know how I found out about it. I may have Googled something about menopause, Clarissa, and suddenly this comedian came up, and she is so funny because she said, what did she say? She said, for the men in the audience, she said, if you don't know what a hot flush feels like you're being microwaved from the inside. And all the women in the audience were laughing, and I was laughing, and I thought to myself, she's really doing a really good job, this woman, because she's going through menopause, and so she talks a lot about the physical experience and the mental experience. And so I shared that with someone the other day who's having a bit of a rough time, and I said, just watch this and just find the humor. So any excuse to switch on the PNS and switch off the SNS.
Absolutely. Dilia, we have had such a fantastic conversation about the kind of need to understand the complexity of the world we live in, and really ensuring that we're not just working on the sex hormones, but really addressing stress and what burdens we can or can't carry. If you had to leave the listeners with one final thought, what would that be?
I thought about this, and I've obviously been applying this to my life as well. And one of the things I think that all of us can benefit from, especially as we go through this huge change, is to simplify our lives, make our lives as simple as possible. And for me, one of the things that I did, and this is quite a personal share, I used to get highlights in my hair. And, you know, you've got to go every 6 weeks because otherwise it doesn't look good. And I just said, you know what? I want a simple life. I want a life where I'm not dictated to by the hairdresser. And so that was one of the ways that I simplified my life. I said, I'm stopping with highlights now. You know, I don't care that I'm getting a little, that I've got some gray hair. I want to be a holistic person. I want to stop trying to do something that isn't really necessary and is actually just impinging on my life. So that's a little bit of a share to illustrate simplification. The more complexity we have in our own lives, our own personal lives, the more overwhelmed we feel. And the more we feel we have to keep up with doing 10,000 things that may not be important. There is already so much complexity out there in the world. If we simplify our lives enough, which allows us to focus on reducing our stress levels and embracing the joy that we can then go and find because we've got space for it, that I would like to leave everybody with.
That is such a fantastic last thought. Dilia, where can people find out about your work and connect with you?
If people want to know what the checklist is that I follow myself every single day, and I put it together after COVID, because so many people asked me what I was doing to stay sane. I was living in Australia at the time, and the lockdowns and the rules and the regulations in every different state was really quite overwhelming. And I had a husband overseas, and he was trying to get back, and I was trying to visit him. And so I became actually quite overwhelmed. So I sat down and I made a checklist for myself. So if people want that checklist, I'll send you the link and they can get that checklist, and that will put them onto my newsletter. And in my newsletter, I discuss all sorts of ways to keep ourselves thriving and to keep us stress resilient. And I'll share that with you, and then you can share that with your community, Clarissa. And I find that's the simplest way, because if you've got a checklist, you just go through it every day, and guess what happens? You create a new neural pathway, and you just follow those steps every single day. I've got a lovely exercise in my checklist, which is wonderful for our back. I've got a fantastic physiotherapist friend in Australia, and I've actually got the images of her in my checklist, and people can just easily do this little exercise. It'll take them 60 seconds, and it just releases all the stress in your top shoulders, in your shoulders, at the top of your shoulders, which most of us feel because we work on our keyboards. So that's just one of the things that are on my 7-point checklist. So I'd be delighted if people can take that on. Simplifying, just doing those things, makes it a whole lot easier to get through the day and make ourselves more stress resilient.
That's brilliant. And definitely, yes, we'll have those links in the show notes and to the community here. So listeners, you can take the checklist, do those things, build new neural pathways. Dilia, as ever, it's a pleasure talking to you, and such great knowledge that's grounded in fantastic science, but brought to life in a way that all of us who aren't neuroscientists can access. Thank you so much for coming on Thriving Through Menopause podcast again.
My pleasure, Clarissa. Thank you so much for having me.
I hope that you got a chance to really listen to this in-depth conversation from one of the foremost thinkers around women's mental health, stress, burnout, and the ways that we can overcome that. Delia shared some really strong points around chronic stress, around how women's brains are different, and the impact the last few years, and of course the current negative fear-mongering conversation around menopause, can actually do for the way in which our menopause experiences unfold. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, and of course what that meant for you, or maybe you took away some ideas and thoughts about what you might want to do about it, and I'd love to hear from you more. Next week, I'll be in conversation with Tracy Sider, and we will be talking about movement and alignment. So join me for a very different kind of conversation. And in the meantime, do like, subscribe, and share this episode with someone you think could benefit from this episode or from listening to Thriving Through Menopause. And don't forget to check out my new book, Beyond Hormones, which is available now on Amazon everywhere in the world. Until next time, go well.